there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 259, the announcements edition. We got a lot of great stuff coming down the pike for you on today's show. So 259 episodes, including this one in the can. It's kind of an interesting little number there, for no other reason than it's significantly larger than I ever thought I would actually reach. When you first do your episode, your first podcast, and you spit out the number 001, it has kind of a promise to it, because you already put the two zeros in the beginning. You're not ostentatious enough to actually put three zeros in the front saying you're going to hit 1,000 shows. But, you know, it's kind of interesting and fun to see it all filled out, all the digits kind of doing their thing, you know what I mean? So we have a great show lined up for you on today's podcast. You are going to be hearing about a great number of things, such as Starbucks, the Olympics, PodCamp, solar power, anthropology, ice cream, and wine. A whole bunch of different things, all on one great little show. Hopefully you're going to enjoy what we got going for you today. It's going to be an interesting little mix of stuff. We're going to be hitting some stuff not nowhere near as hard as we have been the last couple shows. I don't know why. I started feeling, I guess, a little bit preachy. And that's not what you came here to see most of the time. So we're trying to keep things fast and loose, so to speak, and we're just going to be getting up and out with all the great news and content that I've been finding. We have found a way to harness the power of the sun. You're going to see about that a little bit later on in today's show. like I said, it's kind of an interesting show, at least I think. We have Tech Cruft and Caffeine and Food. We have a huge amount of Tech Cruft, along with two little announcements at the end of that. Then we have some Caffeine and Food to round out the show, some recipes and some other fun things living in there as well. So let's just get right on down to it. But before we get into the actual meat and the potatoes of the show, did want to cover a couple little bases. The first thing I did want to talk to you about was just a little bit about our sponsor. We are absolutely thrilled to announce that GoToMeeting, the best way to conduct an online meeting, just got even better, because GoToMeeting is now available for a Mac. Start online meetings on the fly or schedule them in advance. Everyone logs onto your meeting during a conference call, and they can see your desktop on their screen. It's just like they're standing next to you. If you haven't tried GoToMeeting free, now is the time. For a free 30-day trial, please visit www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts. That's www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcasts. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. It's been kind of great working with them, and I got to tell you, the new version is heads above the previous one. Not that I had too many complaints about the previous one, but there's just so much interesting stuff you can do, and I'm really excited about the fact that it's actually being able to be used on a Mac. So hopefully you head on over there and give that a shot. Let's see what else we got. Oh yeah, first of all, if you are looking for this podcast, you can find it living over at www.caffeination.com. Coincidentally enough, that is caffeination.com, this being the Caffeination Podcast. It kind of makes everything a little bit easier, you know what I mean? If you are looking for a way to comment, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, anything else you'd like to send my general direction, please feel free to funnel all of that to caffeination@gmail.com. You can also send me a Skype at thecaffeination, or you can direct phone, or you can leave a voicemail directly. I don't know where I was going with that, at 215-240-1319. A bevy of different choices for you to play around with in case you'd like to comment, or you could just do so after the episode, as some people are wont to do. It's been kind of a fun little time here in the Caffeination lair. So the past couple days we've been house sitting a dog, or dog sitting rather, so a little bit of extra work associated with that, but it also gives me some time to think while I'm out walking the dog. I haven't had to do that in a little while, so it's relaxing at the one point in time, but at the same point in time I'm kind of glad that I don't have to do it in the snow, because it's only for a week. But I gotta tell you, I've come up with some interesting stuff that we're going to be talking about a little bit later on today's show, and I'm really excited about it. So I'm going to try and hold my horses, so to speak, or the dog as the case may be, and kind of ease into the rest of the information. We have a couple minor issues, apparently, at the Olympics, and this is just a little bit about how tech changes everything. Now, I don't know if you've seen it, but there's been a little bit of a kerfuffle about how China has handled the opening ceremonies specifically. Now, we're a couple days after that at this point. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure most of you have heard. There's two big things that have recently come out. The first is that the little girl, the angelic little girl, who sang the Chinese national anthem in the opening ceremonies actually was lip-syncing for another little girl who was not as angelic in appearance and thus was kind of booted out of the way. And, you know, even though she had a better singing voice, she was kind of passed over for somebody who looked more the part. And people are, you know, notoriously outraged, and there's a whole bunch of other fun big words that are floating around. And then there's the other one where apparently the pictures that were seen online during the opening ceremonies, where there were footprints going across the sky in Beijing, going from the Tiananmen Square and a couple other different things to finally ending in the Bird's Nest Stadium, were actually computer generated, so they were not there as they were seen on TV. There were still fireworks, it did still look like footfalls going across the nighttime sky into Beijing, but if you were sitting there in the Bird's Nest Stadium, but as I'm assuming most of you were not, what they did was it would have been too hard to keep a constant camera angle for the actual live shot, so what they did was they filtered it in and kind of made it look like it was from a helicopter and did a little bit of a video editing. I actually applaud them for that. I mean, that's kind of fun and cool that they were able to do so almost flawlessly. So, I mean, I don't really think that's a big thing. And in regards to the other story where the one little girl was swapped out for another, I really feel bad for the one that didn't get to sing. I mean, if you read the article that we have posted up over there, she said that she was proud to have been chosen to sing at all. And the other little girl wasn't even told that she was lip-syncing. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, it's nothing against China and it's nothing against this, but it's part of the... The reason that I see that this relates to technology, and the other one's a little bit more relevant, but there's so many different things that are scrutinized now because we have all this technology to be able to go back over and over and over things, and you can revisit different different pieces of history and different pieces of current events and kind of pick them apart. So people have tended to become a little bit more self-righteous when it comes to it, because you know what, hindsight is really 20/20, and you know, being able to go back and pick apart these little things is some people's new hobby. So I mean, yes, while it's a shame that the girl didn't get to sing and she was passed up for appearance purposes, I mean, that I personally don't agree with that. I don't think that that's a very, very nice thing to do, but I can understand why China would want to put the best image forward. It's just something that you can't really, put your own little mind on. And I don't blame either of the girls or anybody involved. It's just how it happened. And I don't think this would have been nearly as big of a story a couple years ago, because it would have kind of come up and then it would have faded away. But now that you have the blogosphere and you have all these other different little things kind of feeding into the frenzy, people are getting more and more amped up about this thing, which honestly at this point happened several days ago. I mean, I think it happened around it happened 5 days ago at this point, and it's just now starting to reach that fevered pitch. Even though it was mentioned like 3 days after the fact, it's just starting to now reach that fevered pitch. And in the grand scheme of the blogosphere, what you're going to have happen is it's going to reach probably, it's going to continue at this nice high fevered pitch probably for another 4 or 5 days, and then it's going to fade into obscurity just because that's how things go, unfortunately. But I mean, you know, it's one of those things where this would not be possible if we didn't have the technology that we do right now. So it's kind of interesting to see how it's playing out and how it's affecting social issues as it goes forward. Up next, we have a little bit of an article about the newest Prius, or is this just tiny Al Gore's new solar car? Well, apparently a bunch of researchers have designed the most aerodynamic race car ever. It is literally the size of a quarter. It runs completely on solar energy, and I have no idea why they would do this, except for the fact that I think it's kind of cool. For 12 pounds, which I think is around $24 to $25, you too can get this thing. It's 33 millimeters by 22 millimeters by 14 millimeters high. It is unbelievably tiny, runs entirely off of solar energy, and I don't even know if there's like a way you can steer it, or if it's one of those things kind of like the old kid's car where you put it down, you pull it back, and you let it go, whether you not, you just sit this on the ground, and then based on the solar energy that powers the electric motor that's in there, it just kind of runs to the daylight, you know what I mean? So I think it's kind of funny and kind of cool, and it's interesting to see that solar energy is really kind of reaching an interesting little penetration point right now. And it brings you to the next article over at Tech Dirt, again, or not Tech Dirt, sorry, rather Trend Hunter. 15 different windows open at any one point in time. Sometimes I mention the wrong thing. But it's interesting to see the stuff that's over at Trend Hunter. There's a lot of stuff about solar energy right now, and I don't know if it's just because green is quote-unquote hot, or if it's just that we're reaching that point in the penetration of the technology where it's becoming affordable enough to try and attach it to other things that it's we're going to start seeing like leaps and bounds in innovation. One of the most energy draining appliances that's out there in most homes is an air conditioner. And unfortunately, air conditioners are used at the absolute peak of the heat. So it's much harder for electric engines and electric motors and everything to actually operate efficiently at higher temperatures. So they're actually more inefficient. The current air conditioning unit that's actually behind my house is probably around 16 or 20 years old. And from what I was told, there's a certain rating scale that they have for efficiency ratings, and the government does not allow air conditioning units to be sold if they don't rate at, like, I think it's right now you can't get one less than a 10 or a 12 on whatever scale they have. Apparently ours is a 6, so, and the higher the number the better. So we're looking towards replacing that, and you can only hope that options like this next thing, the solar powered air conditioning from GreenCore, actually becomes available and kind of fits into a budget. I don't know if it would still fit into the budget that we got here at the Caffeination Lair, because, you know, I have lots of computer equipment. I'd like to keep it nice and chilly, but I just don't have the cash flow to shell out several extra $1,000 for a solar helped air conditioner. However, I do think that they are one of the few prime instances where we really should be investigating greener technology, because, you know, they are used at the period in time in which solar energy is the easiest to generate. So, you know, the hardest working part of your air conditioner's day is the midday sun. And most people honestly aren't even home at that point, and you could probably save yourself some coin by actually bumping up the temperature in your house for when you're not there, or getting a programmable thermostat, which is something I've looked into around here. Just haven't followed through on that one yet. So it's kind of interesting to see what exactly, you know, the solutions they have. Well, apparently the GreenCore system has one 170-watt solar panel. It can keep a 600-square-foot room nice and cool. And they say if either the demand for electricity outstrips the current production of the solar panel, you can actually hook it up to the grid so it can actually draw power after the fact. But, you know, it's a supplemental. It's a way of cutting down the impact of the air conditioner both on the grid, because, I mean, if you look at the electric grid in like mid-August, usual mid-August, not the current August that we're having here in the Philadelphia area, which is mild to cool, but if you look at the usual electric grid, I mean, this is when they start the rolling brownouts. This is when they start the crazy demand, and they reach all new records because everybody has like 15 different air conditioners on at one point in time, and they're all working their hardest. So it only makes sense that these two technologies become married eventually. Now, there were other interesting technologies that were out there a little while ago, such as technologies where the air conditioner would not run during the day, but rather it would have a system involving some kind of tank of water where it would run at night, freeze the water around the radiator of pipes, and then during the day when the sun was at its hottest, it wouldn't actually be drawing power off the grid. It would only be using off-peak power, and the water or whatever coolant was running through it would actually go through the ice block that was created at night to help transfer the heat. And apparently this is a little bit more common in the larger industrial and commercial engines. I was actually talking to one of my friends who's a buildings engineer for Siemens, and he was saying, you know, some of the air conditioning systems they have right now would blow your mind if you really knew the information behind them. I tried to press him for a little bit more details, but he wasn't very forthcoming, but I'd love to be able to talk him into actually taking me up to see some of these massive air conditioners that we have on some of the data centers in our area, so that'd be kind of fun. But he was recently talking, you know, he routinely works on computer systems that are located, you know, in air ducts and other things like that. Air ducts so big that, you know, a 6 foot tall man would not have to stoop to walk into. I mean, these are massive systems. So, I mean, that's where the real innovation is going to hit first until it finally trickles down to the normal yous and me's of the world. All right, up next, another little article on solar yet again. This one's from over at Tree Hugger. Everybody always has that, well, I know a lot of people who have a dream of eventually putting solar panels on your roof, because really, what are you doing with your roof? Your roof is empty real estate. There's nothing up there for most of us, unless you live in an apartment, in which case your roof is somebody else's floor, and this will not apply to you. However, you know, there's always that black tar or silver roof up above your head, and, you know, it's basically unused real estate. And I've considered actually, you know, looking into putting a green roof up on the house. Not like the stereotypical green usage of the word, but actually, you know, it's a form of sod and turf that goes up there, and it's supposed to reduce heating and cooling bills significantly. But there's another roof covering that I would love to have up on there, and that's a solar panel roof. And just because, even though it might not be able to take the house off the grid, so to speak, because the efficiency of actual solar panels is not yet too such a point where you'd be able to, you know, just say cut your house off from everything completely, but there's a it could significantly reduce the energy bills for your house. And if you have the solar panels on the roof and you have one of those GreenCore air conditioners in the backyard, I mean, you could be set to jet. But there's a lovely little article over at Tree Hugger that talks about how you can test out your home's solar power potential with RoofRay online solar calculator. Now, this is originally designed for Southern California, so if you live in those environs, then you too can head on over there and check this out with absolute accuracy on a lot of the different things. What I mean, and there's actually a link on the actual podcast site, so you can go right to RoofRay and play around with it. What it does is basically uses Google Maps and a point and click system to allow you to choose the area of your roof you would like to populate with solar panels, and then you move on to simulating your electric bill. You can either put in your average electric bill, or you can put in your electric bill per month for the last year. Then it allows you to choose one of four electricity providers. This is where it falls by the wayside for everybody outside of Southern California, because they have only Southern California electric providers in there, and the rates differ as you go around the country and the world, so this isn't going to really be accurate for that. And if you're using a different currency, obviously it's not going to really fit the bill for that either. But then you can keep going further. You can actually tell the tilt of your roof, which I think is where I'm actually falling short, because I live in a row house, or a townhome, as the case may be, if I were to live outside the city, and I have a flat roof pretty much. Most they said average roof angle is 24 degrees. I said I think mine might be 5, because there's a gentle sloping towards the gutter system, but that's about it. I mean, pretty much it's like a slightly cockeyed floor in a house. That's about it up there. It's pretty much flat level and mighty hot in the summertime. So what they're saying is if... And then they give you the statistics after the fact at RoofRay. What they do is they break down exactly how much you're spending on electricity per month. Then they break down how much the solar panel installation that you could fit on your roof, how much that would alleviate your current electrical burden. Then they tell you approximately how much it would cost to put solar panels on your roof for that particular square footage. And then they tell you how long it would be before the investment in the solar panels on your roof would actually pay for themselves. I mean, this is really, really cool and really good information. So for me, it would cost $62,000 to put solar panels on my roof, and that's like a 700 square foot area. I think I got it right. I unfortunately, with Google Maps, if you were to search for my exact address, it actually picks a house somewhere down the street and around the bend. So I actually kind of migrate around, found out that Google apparently took a picture of my house while I'm actually in it, which is kind of cool because since we moved in 3 years ago, the Google Map was showing the old tenant, or the old the people who lived here with their incredibly ratty front yard and everything. So it's kind of interesting to see some of the minor modifications actually make it through to to the online sites now. So it's kind of, I feel a little bit of a sense of pride, civic pride, in the fact that my current domicile is actually portrayed accurately, even if it's in the wrong spot on the map. But I know why it's in the wrong spot. Apparently it's a city planning issue, but you know, it's kind of interesting nonetheless. But apparently $62,000 to have my tiny little roof outfitted solar style. So not going to happen anytime soon. Oh yeah, by the way, it would pay for itself in 23 years. Can't remember if I actually said that. So by the time it paid for itself, my son could be married and have kids and everything. So that's pretty, that's a pretty long time. By the way, he's not even two yet. So kind of interesting little look at it. And, you know, maybe if I had a little bit more square footage. And one of the things that they actually mentioned over at Treehugger and at Device by Proxy, the original site where I found the article, is that, you know, in 5 years, it's going to cost half as much and be twice as efficient. So it's going to take even less time. So the longer you wait at this point, the better off you'll be, because they keep getting more and more efficient solar panels. So it's going to be really awesome to see where this actually ends up. Now moving away from the solar style of things, we have a little article about what's old is new again. The Polaroid actually returns. Now, if you remember the old shake it like a Polaroid picture kind of style, they had the standard Polaroids for years and years and years, had the instant film. You take a picture, you get a 3x4 out the front, and then you wait for the actual chemicals to do their little thing, and then you would get your little picture. So it would slowly fade into existence from a beige background, and it would be lovely full color by the time it was completely realized. Well, in January, Polaroid stopped selling the instant film. So if you have a Polaroid camera, you actually have to go on eBay or some other place to buy old film. And old film only has a certain amount of shelf life, so it's eventually not going to really work too well. And they still have all the patents for actually producing the film, so it's not like a third-party vendor could do it. That's another little problem with the patent system right there. But Polaroid is trying to kind of make the rounds and do the right thing by their own business. I mean, it was a really strong business decision, and it kind of really cut to the quick of what Polaroid actually was. I mean, their entire brand is based off of that product. I mean, when you say Polaroid, you think of a Polaroid. You think of, you know, taking a picture. You know, if you didn't have one of those cameras, you know, people would shake them even if they shouldn't, just to get the picture to develop that much quicker. Everybody's had the experience of having their picture taken, and before digital pictures, the instant gratification of actually having the picture in your hands was just not only novel but awesome all in the same thing. So it's kind of interesting to see Polaroid is now actually trying to integrate a small printer into their cameras, something I thought they should have done years ago. You know, I thought they should have been investigating into this. Maybe the price point just got to the right fact where they could actually put the technology in there. But they're actually going to be putting a small printer inside the camera, so it's going to be just like the Polaroids of old without the developing time. So you're going to be able to take a picture and have it immediately dispense a 4x3 rectangle size, the common association, a little bit of nostalgia in that. So I would hope that there's also kind of a memory card so you can kind of slip one in there, and just in case, you know, something happens to the picture, you still have like a digital backup. I think that would be unbelievable. And the technology is so small now, I can't see why they wouldn't do it. But alright, next on, we have a little bit of a weird article from over at device.com. It says, working out with TechCruft, and they show you a set of barbells created with CDs, old CDs. I've actually seen a couple people who use different pieces of heavy equipment to actually get their workout in, so I just wanted to pass this along because I thought it was pretty humorous. First little announcement, and if you were ever a Boy Scout and you were in camp, you know the song of announcements, announcements, announcements. When you're up, you're up, and when you're down, you're down, and when you're only halfway up, you're neither up or down. Yeah, I know, I'm sorry for singing yet again, but whenever anybody says that word announcement, it's such a visceral reaction to that song floats through my head that it's obviously I've been brainwashed. But the first one I wanted to make unbelievably and blindingly clear is that PodCamp Philly is just around the corner. September 6th and 7th of 2008, yes, a mere couple of weeks away, it will be hosted at the lovely environs of Temple University in beautiful and scenic North Philadelphia. So if you are in the area or you plan to be in the area and you'd like to attend, there is a fee of $20, which will be donated directly to a Philadelphia charter school, which focuses on technology education. So not only are you going to have the pleasure of attending such a fine conference at a wonderful university such as this, but you are also going to be able to help out a local charity at the same point in time. There's going to be all kinds of great stuff going on. And I got to tell you, last year at the PodCamp that was held at Drexel, I learned more about social media and I got more excited about doing podcasts and the actual space that we're in than I've been in any other 6 month period. I mean, that 1 2-day event got me more excited, more amped up, and allowed me to get more connections to other people in the industry, so to speak, than any other 6 months that I've spent working on the podcast for the last 2.5 years. So if you're in the area, I highly suggest it's a fantastic time. And the people there are great. Everybody's friendly. And it's just a really neat little event to go to. So head on over to podcampphilly.com. And then the next little announcement that we have right here is something I've been kind of hinting at for a while. And there's actually a little article that I do not have anything to do with, but it's kind of a way of talking about what I'm going to be doing here. It says, you might be a digital anthropologist, and they go through, the article is really kind of interesting, and it talks about how there needs to be people, and there have been companies that have hired people who are anthropologists who are specifically trained to go in and look for patterns in situations, and what their idea is that these people are actually, looking at patterns and situations. They're actually studying different cultures and everything like that. So it's really kind of cool. And it says that the one quote from the article, it says, some of the most forward-thinking companies like IDEO have invested in hiring anthropologists, people who combine an intuitive curiosity with a learned skill for observation and pattern detection. That is the most concise definition of what an anthropologist should do that I have ever heard, and I really want to just tattoo that on my arm. Not that I'm going to, but that's exactly what an anthropologist is trained to do. And I had the lovely fortune of going to college for an anthropology degree at the very end, and what I had originally intended on doing my thesis on when I moved on, and which I will eventually be doing, was I wanted to investigate online communities. And I was told by the people who were in the program at the time that there was no future in just such a study. So I've decided at this point in time that I'm going to be starting a second podcast. It's going to be hosted over at paulrmuller.com. I'm going to have links to it from this podcast and a couple other things, where I'm going to be investigating things from more of a digital anthropology perspective, where I'm going to be looking at different patterns, where I'm going to be kind of examining the different cultures that emerge online, and I'm just going to try and give my opinion on what things I see are and how the different trends are going. So I don't know if this is going to fly. I don't know if it's going to take off the ground. So if that's something you might be interested in, it's going to be a direct internet culture and other things like that. It's not going to be as fluffy as the Caffeination podcast can be at any one point in time. And if you enjoy some of the preachy little rants that I go on, I'm pretty sure there's going to be a couple of them over there as well. I'm also going to try and do a little bit more video and stuff like that. So hopefully we're going to be able to really tackle some interesting issues over there. I would greatly appreciate if when the first episode goes up, and I will be talking to you about that in the next couple of weeks, if when the first episode goes up, you just go on over there and give me constructive criticism. If it's horrible, please tell me it's horrible. If you like the idea, please just shoot me an email and let me know. All right, that's the other announcement that we have here. I mean, it's just that I'm starting up officially the second podcast, and it's all going to be about angling things from a digital anthropology perspective, kind of a digital ethnography, so to speak, but not really an ethnography, because ethnographies are the story of a culture specifically. There is a story of what was originally designed to be an ethnic group, so it's not going to be that kind of thing. It's since digital conversations kind of supersede that, they transcend that one barrier, it's going to be kind of interesting to play around with. And I don't want to start preaching on it now, but I'm just so excited to even even try this, so even if I fall flat on my face, it's going to be fantastic. So I would love for some of you to come over there and join the journey with me. All right, caffeine and food section. And by the way, the Caffeination Podcast will not be going away because I'm known everywhere as the coffee guy. I can't be the coffee guy if I'm not doing something about coffee. I mean, that's just antithetical to what I am. The reason the Caffeination Podcast is the way it is because I love technology news. I love finding out all the cool and crazy and insane little things and tidbits that are available online and sharing them with people. I've met so many cool people through this podcast, and I believe that we have a really kind of interesting dialogue going on. So before we hit the caffeine and food section, rather, nice and hard, we're going to give you just a little bit of information. If you'd like to send me comments, feedback, suggestion on this or anything else, you can do so via caffeination@gmail.com. You can also Skype me at The Caffeination, and the full contact details are available at www.caffeination.com. Caffeination.com, just remember. All right, moving right along to the caffeine and food section. First up, we have a great little article, which is actually a recipe from over at ineedcoffee.com, where it talks about how you would create your very own ice cream recipe. And they talk about coffee ice cream, specifically enough, and they talk about making a mocha almond fudge ice cream, which just sounds absolutely fantastic. I remember making ice cream in Scouts, and we didn't have the ice cream maker. You actually had to sit there and you churn the thing. So the one part of the actual essay which I don't like is that they said you just put it in the ice cream maker. It's like, well, what did we do without that? So I'm going to have to research that, and I might try and find a Wikipedia article on creating ice cream without the ice cream maker, but everything else looks really good. It's an interesting little process that goes into making ice cream, and I just wanted to kind of pass it along just because the entire thing really, really kind of speaks to me. Up next is a problem I have encountered on a couple of different occasions, but the scouting motto was be prepared, and I actually had my scout knife with the corkscrew on it. Never understood why they put a corkscrew on a Boy Scout knife when you needed to be 21 to drink, and you couldn't be a scout after you were 18. Never really understood that. Maybe it was just for the leaders in case they decided to get tanked on a weekend. Not that I ever saw that happen, but it's just kind of one of those weird little coincidences, and I know it was on the Swiss Army knives, so it's anybody could own a Swiss Army knife, and I still have my Boy Scout knife. But, you know, what happens if you find yourself confronted with a bottle of wine that you would like to consume with friends or without friends, and you don't have a corkscrew on you? Well, you might have a couple of these other props, and this is how you can get into a bottle of wine without a corkscrew. I found it kind of an interesting little idea. And what the person said to do was take a 2-inch or longer screw, screw it down into the center of the cork, then use a claw hammer, and slowly and gently pull it out of the bottle. Just some of the pictures that they have up there, specifically step 4, yank the cork, are just really kind of interesting and funny, and without any description, you would really wonder what exactly was going on, because they show you a hammer in the distance, an open bottle of wine, and what appears to be a nail in the middle of the cork. So it's either some kind of strange ritual from a culture we have not yet encountered, or it's an incredibly innovative way of opening a bottle of wine. Never really thought about it, so kind of wanted to play around with that one. Don't have a bottle of wine that actually has a cork right now, because most of them are coming either screw top. Even the relatively decent wines are coming with the screw tops now. I don't know why. I know that there's a shortage on the actual wood cork, so that a lot of different wineries are moving towards rubberized stoppers and screw tops as a way of getting around that. But I do know that there's still a couple different wineries that are actually still using cork. So just a little fun tidbit off to the side. How would you like to have a computer-controlled coffee roaster? I know it's kind of a little bit of a jump there, but hey, this is the Caffeination Podcast. Got to talk a little bit about coffee here. And there is a huge system set up, and this is from over at InventorSpot.com, and I could think of no better place to host a guide on this, but it's really strange. One side, it looks like a Tesla coil that you hook up to your computer, and on the other side, it looks like just a giant popcorn popper. So I wanted to pass that along in case any of you people are such a the geek that you would be able to actually construct one of these. I'd like to talk to you if that's the case. But, I mean, I just think it's really cool to see the level of ingenuity that people will go to actually do their own roasted beans. And I know that there's a couple different guides out there to, you know, what the best coffee roaster that you could get is, or what's a low-cost solution. I don't think this is necessarily a low-cost solution. I think this is more of a fully automated solution. And it's one of the things that I honestly don't know if you can automate, because there's so many other tiny fine details that actually get put into it that the actual production of the roasting of the coffee from the first crack and all that other stuff, which we may have talked about previously. But I wonder if you could actually computer control that. I mean, it's kind of a little bit there takes some skill to actually do it, but we'll see what happens with that, and if there's any other kind of information. And from the low end and strange scale, we go a little bit off the grid here. The Swivel Barbecue is a tripod for easy hobo grilling on the go, according to device.com. It's basically three stainless steel poles with a suspended hanging chain link basket. And the only thing that I'm looking at this, and I understand it's not hobo-rific, the only thing I can say about this is that it must be designed for the hobo riche, because it costs $265 for three non-telescoping stainless steel poles and a metal hanging basket. I love the concept. However, I think the execution is severely lacking. First of all, they should be telescoping poles. There's no reason that they shouldn't be. The entire idea of one of these things seems to be compact and easily portable nature. This would be great for backpacking. You wouldn't have to build any other kind of system. But then again, if you're backpacking and you're still doing fires and everything like that, I highly suggest you learn how to cook on coals. It's just much, much easier. And then the last little article that we have here today is Starbucks is too expensive, a new survey says, according to the Star Tribune from Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota. Well, you know what I see this as? Because I'm seeing more and more of these articles out there. This is the backlash continuing. Starbucks is taking hits because they have become sort of the poster child for the current economic climate that we find ourselves in. I mean, everybody is struggling just a little bit to make ends meet when it comes to, paying for gas and all other kinds of things that are out there. Everything's becoming more expensive, from even like the little things like the airlines charging for bags and stuff like that, and it's also kind of building on the general consciousness of things. So what people do is they tend to target some of these organizations which have such a brand associated with luxury, and Starbucks has become one of those brands that, even though they're still in dire straits, and even though there are slightly more less expensive coffee options on the menu, people have come to taking to joking at Starbucks' expense, just because not only is it very common right now, and not only is it the cool thing to do. I mean, I'm not no fan of the brand, and I'm no fan of the stores in general, but I think they're heaping too much of the blame, and there's too many people out there saying, yeah, you know what, the first thing to go is going to be the coffee. And yeah, you're right. You know what, it's time to start talking about something else, because you can only start beating that dead horse so many times. And it's kind of weird, because I was in a seminar today, and they were giving out coffee cards. They were giving out $25 Starbucks gift cards. And I heard the same comment. I actually was thinking the same comment. I was like, oh, that'll buy you like three cups of coffee. Just kind of as an offhand, silly little joke, look how clever I am. The funny thing is, everybody in the room was making the same joke, including the presenter, who was trying to alienate people through comedy. She said, oh, that'll get you about a latte and a half. And everybody kind of understands that unfortunately, that is Starbucks brand image right now. And I really don't know what they could actually do to change that. I really don't even know if they want to change it. But It's just kind of interesting. One of the things I just wanted to kind of touch on and then move on. I'd like to thank you for sticking around. This has been Caffeination number 259, the announcements edition, because I'm really amped and excited about what we talked about here today, both PodCamp Philly and the new digital anthropology blog over at paulrmuller.com, which is where you'll find my web presence index currently. But it's just kind of an interesting little time here in the Caffeination's history, so as we branch out and talk about different things. Hopefully you'll join us. And if you don't want to, no problems, no worries. We will always be here at Lovingly Nestled over at www.caffinaton.com. That is caffeination.com. That is the home of the Caffeination Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Stay caffeinated, people.